Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:10 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 21st, the longest day of the year, and it must have felt like a long day for a lot of people in Europe because the majority of indices were down in excess of 1%. That is in response primarily, I think, to the fact that we had some strength in the euro. But I think when we look at the chart, we can see, for example, that it wasn't an awful lot of strength, but it did qualify as an upside key reversal. It didn't quite close off or close at the peak of the day, but it did close above the high of the previous day, and it did make a new intraday low at today's nadir. So what that suggests is that this is still a rather tacit sign of support coming back in, and that upside follow through tomorrow would really be required to confirm the signal. Well, we also know that the euro is somewhat overextended on the downside, but it has a lot of challenges that are out there in front of it. And most particularly, you have what's going on in Italy. We have to at least, I think, remember that Italian debt out to almost 3 years was trading at negative yields until early May, and now we've got the 10-year at 2.75%. But it has bounced rather emphatically from this 2.5% level. That is well above the highs of the range that existed for most of 2017 and 2018 until May. And it does confirm that there is a more risky environment with regard to Italian debt outstanding. Now, there is an important factor that I think should be taken into account. It's that Italy has got almost as much debt to roll over this year as the USA does. And therefore, it is in large part beholden to the ECB and to the magnanimity of investors generally to take up its paper. Well, that means that there is very little chance that the Italians are going to leave the euro, because they'd have an even more difficult time of trying to roll over their debt if that were the case. The only way that that could happen is if they went the absolutely atomic route and decided to default on their debt, and that really does look unlikely. But much more likely is that they have already succeeded in pushing the immigration issue onto the front foot, and that Europe does look likely to come and have some real discussions about what to do about immigration, how it is all going to be funded, particularly with this rule that they have that whatever country the person lands in first is going to pick up all of the costs subsequently, regardless of where somebody moves to. That's rather ridiculous, considering that everybody is coming in from the south and east, and that the northwest of Europe is largely insulated from that flow. So the unfairness of that system is going to get challenged. But now that Italy and the new populist government has got some evidence that it can impact policy, well, its next target is going to be the fiscal rules that are part of the Eurozone. And they are most likely going to be broken by Italy. And that is why yields are still higher, because there is that inherent uncertainty. With so much debt, Italy, or at least investors, need to see that Italy is going to behave in an orderly fashion, and that is just not a likely scenario right now. So that is putting pressure on Italian stocks generally, and when we think about what is exactly in the FTSE MIB index, well, it is primarily banks, or there are a lot of banks in it. Now, the index has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. It has broken the progression of higher reaction lows since the middle of 2016, so this is, by definition, a downtrend. And it needs to sustain a move back above the trend mean in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I don't think the fact that it has been ranging below 25,000 since 2009 is lost on many people looking at the 10-year chart. And there is the potential that, having failed to get all the way up to the upper side of, to break out from the upper side of this range, that it could potentially go all the way back down and test the lower side. And that is a potential outcome, and not least because of this inherent uncertainty with regard to the intentions of a new populist government. Well, It's also when we think about the banking sector, banks are liquidity providers. Bull markets thrive on liquidity. Therefore, banks should do well in a liquidity abundant environment. Well, when banks are not doing well, it tells us that the liquidity environment is not particularly conducive to liquidity providers, and therefore we have to question whether we're still in a bull market environment. Well, if we look at European banks, this is a range that has been compressing, particularly since 2012. If we think about the relative performance of the banks compared to a weak index like Italy, then the lows are lower since 2009. And instead of it being a range between approximately 75 and 250, it's now more like a range between about 75 and 160. So there has been a substantial compression, and we still have the progression of lower rally highs from that peak in 2009. Now the question is, how many more of the constituents of this index are going to be nationalized, and what impact would that have on their performance? Then we have to at least consider that it is a little bit oversold in the short term, so there is the potential that we get some steadying. But when we zoom in on the daily chart, this looks more like a distribution than a consolidation. And the risks remain on the downside for the European banking sector. Well, if we zoom out then and look at a broad Eurozone chart, then the sensitivity that European shares have to any sign of strength in the euro is really quite acute. It is not a one-to-one relationship, and the euro stocks is now back below the trend mean. So if we think about where is the epicenter of risk right now, well, it's got to be at least partly in Europe, and the other center of risk is in China. When we look at the A-share index, and that's not particularly effective typing on my behalf, the A-share index was down again in here today, but it was up in early trading and wasn't able to hold it. And when we look at the banking sector, then it didn't even really rally very much at all and closed on the low of the day. This continues to represent a clear risk here, that when we think about the performance of banking sectors, it is the banks in Europe and China are leading on the downside. I've seen a number of pieces of research talking about systemically important financial institutions and the fact that on aggregate they have turned lower. But that's only half the story. The other half of the story is that the systemically important banks that are underperforming right now are all in Europe and China. And that when we look at the performance of the US banking sector, then it's clearly different. That the S&P 500 banks is right in the region of the trend mean. It has not yet broken down. And as long as it is in fact holding the region of the trend mean, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, we are in a more risky environment because of the underperformance of China and Europe. And obviously, these are not two isolated instances. Rather, that it is the threat of trade wars against the background where China has been trying to lean on its shadow banking sector that is stoking this fear among investors. Additionally, Europe does a lot more business with China than the USA does. So if China were to slow down or that demand for industrial goods were to wane, well, then that would lean much more acutely on Europe than it would on the USA. Nevertheless, Wall Street was in negative territory in here today. It was down a bit less than 1%. It's coming right down to the lower side of this developing range. So far, it's been pulling back slower than it rose. This does look different to what we saw in February and March, but so far it's still a corrective phase. It isn't quite as large yet as the range that we saw in May, but there is the potential that we could get there. But as long as we hold the progression of higher reaction lows off of the trend mean, and most particularly as long as the region of the trend mean holds during periods of consolidation, then this continues to look like a range following a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We expect to see these periods of right-hand extension following big pullbacks, and that is exactly what we're getting. Now, the big question, of course, will be the extent to which these the index can continue to hold the region of the trend mean. I think that when we look at the Russell 2000, we have an example of an index that has already broken emphatically upwards, but it is somewhat overbought in the short term, so we certainly have the risk that it is going to pull back, and it could potentially pull back in a dynamic manner, but it has plenty of room in which to do so. If as long as it's holding the region of 1600 and the breakout, then we're still in a trending environment. Then the Nasdaq 100 was also in negative territory in here today, and it is still above the 7000 level. Now, when we think about the leadership within the Nasdaq, then it is companies like Amazon which have been accelerating higher at are at some of the most acute risk of pulling back and having at least some pause or consolidation. For example, this was a small key reversal on Amazon in here today. Then if we look at something like Netflix, which had cruised through the $400 level, well, it was able to close off its lows in here today, but this is an accelerating trend by any definition, and it is really quite overextended relative to the trend mean. So we certainly can't discount the potential that there is room for some consolidation. And I think that that is perhaps the most likely scenario, that we're going to get some consolidation, but the relative strength that we see in the USA remains, I think, the clear leader in here. But of course, if the dollar is reasonably firm, although it was in slightly negative territory today, and perhaps most particularly against the pound, where again you have an upside key reversal here for the pound in a more dynamic manner than you had for the euro. But again, it is going to need upside follow-through tomorrow to really confirm that we have more than short-term steadying going on here. But by and large, the dollar has been resurgent, and the relative strength that we've seen in Wall Street has been, I think, aided by the fact that we've had money flowing back towards the USA from around the world. When we look at some of the performance of emerging markets on a currency-adjusted basis, then when, for example, we look at the Mexican ETF, then that has been plagued by the weakness of the peso. So it's coming back down now towards the lower side of this range over the last 30 months, and we're starting to see just the beginning of signs that it is starting to find support. Again, for example, the Brazilian market has been weighed upon by the underperformance of the real, and that is a very clear break in the progression of higher reaction lows. But again, it's becoming increasingly overextended. So I think the more important point when we look at some of these charts is to highlight the fact that despite when we look at the stock market, that for example, the Brazilian market has been pulling back in a rather dynamic manner. It has broken its progression of higher reaction lows in no uncertain terms, but the stability or otherwise of the currency is going to be a rather large arbiter. And I'm not yet convinced that the low is in for the Brazilian real, but so far it has been reasonably steady, having accelerated towards that four level. Then the market that was perhaps most impressive on the upside in here today was Australia. And the Australian dollar has pulled back in a dynamic manner over the course of the last 2 weeks, and it is a little bit overbought in the short term. But the more important point is that on the medium term, it has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. It's broken its progression of higher reaction lows. This does not look like a bullish chart, despite the fact that there is some room for steadying in the short term. And that weakness in the currency is helping to push the stock market upwards in nominal terms. So the ASX 200 broke out on the upside. When we look at the banking sector, the ASX 300 banks have been pulling back and are right at the region of the lows from 2016, and then we're up in a dynamic manner in here this week. The financials index, which includes a number of the insurance companies, has also bounced from around this 6,000 area. I think some investors at least will be encouraged by the fact that the PE is reasonable and that the yield is up above 5%. So, and then of course because of the way that the system in Australia works, that domestic investors will be able to pick up the gross yield. And for example, National Australia Bank's gross yield is 10% right now. So when people start to consider 10%, then that's attractive enough and oversold enough that people will at least think that it's going to go back up and test the region of the trend mean. Then the question will be whether it can muster enough of additional demand to push above the trend mean, but it does look like the Australian banking sector is going to at least close its overextension relative to the trend mean. Then, if we look at the resources sector, it has been rock steady. It's been obviously bolstered by the relative weakness of the Australian dollar, and we can see that. A graphic example of that when we compare the performance of the FTSE 350 mining index, which has been pulling back over the course of the last few weeks, and not least because the pound has been reasonably steady, particularly in here today. So, by and large, the industrial metal complex has been reasonably steady, with the exception of copper. And copper is leading on the downside, and it has resulted in the index coming back to test the region of the trend mean. Copper prices were again in negative territory in here today, and I think sorry, that is not copper. Bear with me for one moment. Copper prices, which had rallied rather impressively 2 weeks ago, have given up all of that advance. They are now back at the $3 level. Well, that's a pretty impressive failed upside break, and now the price is coming right back down to the lower side of the range. It is going to have to bounce and do so in a dynamic manner to really indicate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So it is certainly all to play for here with the copper price. On the other hand, nickel prices today were in just mildly positive territory, and this continues to look like a consolidation within an otherwise, I think, recovering scenario. But of course, nickel did not participate in the very substantial rally that the industrial metals put in back in 2016, so it is still playing catch up in here. And of course, it has the additional tailwind of demand from the electric vehicles sector. Well, gold prices have been reasonably steady over the course of the last couple of days, but they have been pulling back. Now we are coming. There is a short-term oversold condition, and prices were off the low in here today. When we look at this weekly chart, we know that gold prices have pulled back below the trend mean on successive occasions over the course of the last few years. On each of those occasions, it has bounced in an emphatic manner. And in order to demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, or that demand is returning, then it's going to have to bounce in an emphatic manner. And so far, we haven't seen very much evidence that it's capable of doing that. Silver prices are right back at the lower side of the range. Now, they have been slightly lower than this, but this is the lower side of the range evidence since really the beginning of this year. When we look at silver on a weekly basis, we can see that there is a progression of lower rally highs, and that progression of lower rally highs remains intact, but that the lows are not declining. And this range has held now for just about all of this year. $15 has been an area of support since 2016, but it really does need to rally enough to break the progression of lower rally highs to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And so far, it just has not been able to do that. Then, if we look at platinum, it's pushing onto new lows. So it's breaking downwards from its range. So if we draw the comparison with silver, well, platinum is breaking down. We can't rule out the possibility that silver may do the same. And in the absence of a clear upper dynamic for gold, then that is an increasing possibility. What's also interesting is when we look at palladium, which had been the clear outperformer from the precious metal sector, that it is now back below the trend mean. We had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We're getting some right-hand extension, and then there is the potential that it is going to break downwards from here. That palladium has been outperforming for a considerable period, and that uptrend from the beginning of 2016 is no longer consistent. So I think that's a rather important development. And then we have what's going on in the oil sector. Brent crude was in negative territory today, down $1.60, so coming back down to the lows we saw at the beginning of this week, and the progression of lower rally highs remains intact over the course of the last month. But West Texas Intermediate was in very mildly positive territory, and it's continuing to hold this level around the $65 area. Well, what that also suggests is that the spread between the two contracts is contracting. When we look at West Texas Intermediate, it has bounced from the region of the trend mean, and the progression of major higher reaction lows has held. What that suggests is that WTI is still in an uptrend generally, as long as it's holding the region of the trend mean. And what we've seen in the Permian Basin in Texas is rather interesting, because the drillers are pulling back from investing more in supply because they don't have the pipeline capacity to get all the oil out. It's not as if there isn't enough oil there. It's rather that they're having a there's a bottleneck in terms of how they can get it out of the region. So that does have the potential to take some supply out of the market, or to help to support prices as they come back down towards the trend mean. Then I think what's going on in the bond market is particularly relevant, because I've been giving talks all over the world for the last couple of years, and I've always used this chart and said it's one of the most important charts in the world, because it has been rising in a very aggressive manner since 2008, and it is the balance sheets of the major central banks rebased to US dollars. And well, it's not so long ago it was close to 21 trillion, and right now it's closer to 20 trillion. So the size of central bank balance sheets is reducing, and the last time we saw anything like this kind of reduction was at the end of 2016. Well, if it takes out the $20 trillion level, then we're going to be talking about a bigger reaction, than we've seen since the beginning of 2009. And like I was saying at the beginning of the broadcast, bull markets thrive on liquidity, and central bank balance sheets and their expansion has been the primary avenue with which liquidity has been able to enter the market over the course of the last decade. Well, the fact that the Federal Reserve is reducing the size of its balance sheet, the ECB on aggregate is reducing the size of its purchases and will stop purchasing in September, that is taking additional supply out of the market. So it is throwing the onus for additional new supply onto Japan, and Japan's quantitative easing program is not enough, or isn't large enough, to make up for both the Fed and the ECB removing stimulus. So therefore, what happens in China and the extent to which it is willing to rescue its banking sector and take the foot off the tightening process that is underway in the financial sector right now, is going to be a big arbiter for what happens in terms of global liquidity. And that is most particularly the case when we look at the total return on bonds, because the Merrill Lynch 10-year plus futures have been ranging now for the better part of 4 years, and they are still below the trend mean. This is for an index that, until the initial pullback in 2013, had never traded below the trend mean for any kind of lengthy period. There has been a clear loss of momentum since the Federal Reserve stopped buying bonds. And that is, I think, a very important consideration when we think about what the outlook is for Treasury yields. The Treasury yield was in negative territory for in here today, and the price strengthened somewhat towards the end of trading in here today to take it down to the lows, and it has been pausing around 3%. Well, investors are obviously a little bit more nervous about the outlook for stock markets, so they're buying bonds. But one has to question how much bond yields can rally when we have so much additional supply that's coming to the market. And then on top of that, we have the additional consideration that the Federal Reserve is reducing the size of its balance sheet. Well, there is this chart, which I'm posting in comment of the day today, and it demonstrates that Social Security in the USA is going to move into deficit this year. And that's when you include the interest income, and that the weighting of the balance of the money in that fund is going to be rolling over in a very big way from 2020 onwards. There's an enormous amount of additional new supply of bonds that needs to be rolled over between now and then, and it's either going to require outsized economic growth, which we are getting right now, but the consensus among investors, or at least economists, is that it's not going to be sustained, and that the high from the taxes will eventually wash through the system. Well, that probably then means that either we're going to have to get another big economic bump, or there's going to be higher taxes, or there's going to be less issuance. That they're either going to have to cut back on Social Security, and that doesn't that's an electoral deal breaker. But all of this points towards a government that is in trouble on the fiscal front, and that suggests that they're going to have to pay higher yields for their bonds. So what that suggests to me, at least, is that the bond market is a rather than a buy the dips market, it's now a sell the rallies market. And if the yield gets down towards the region of the trend mean, well, then that's going to be the next opportunity to short these bonds. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.